We find out how medical personnel are often treated in rural parts of West Africa, that they might not be as well compensated as miners, and their profession might be almost as dangerous.
No, definitely. I mean, if you look at the medical world in our countries, is you look at doctors that are on motorbikes, and they're really, and especially when they work for the government, it's worse because their compensation is really, really low. And sometimes, like in big hospital, for example, there's so many people and they're so crowded, and then a lot of people will say that they don't care, but they have so many so much work to do with no equipment, and it's very, very difficult for her, for them. And for in the film, yes, she wants her daughter to be a model, just because she sees that this is beauty, this is fame, and that's all she's looking for. She doesn't understand what being a model is. Either she understands what being a doctor is. So for her, the only thing that she wants is for this daughter to be that beauty that she thinks that is the best for her daughter.
One of the really striking things about the film, about Moaz Zafira, is the black and white photography, which, especially in the night scenes, it really adds an element. Tell us why you chose black and white for this film.
In the beginning of the film, she the first 10 minutes, she really tells us how bad she's feeling and how she doesn't really want to live in the country and in a village, but at the same time she doesn't want to leave because she doesn't think that other places is better. So she's not well. She hates everybody because she thinks that everybody in the villages are lazy, that they're not pushing themselves, they're waiting for food from some organization, and so no one is trying to do anything. And this was for me a way to show her the way she's feeling, because I mean, when you take a black and white compared to color, black and white is faded, there's like nothing happy about it, and that actually was my way to show her the way she's feeling. And then in the film we do have an element that is in color, which is the magazine she actually saw before she decided that her daughter is going to be a model. So and this color becomes like a Bible for her, and towards the film she will follow everything that the magazine will tell her to do.
Well, this is a portrayal of rural life in Burkina Faso, mm-hmm. that obviously you wrote this, it's a fiction film, but how true to life are the depictions of, say, gender roles and a traditional village life to what actually happens, what you've actually experienced back in Burkina?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is when you take those villages, women are supposed to stay at home and take care of the house and take care of the kids. And this is just what it is. You're not supposed to say anything. The men will decide everything and anything in the house. Even in town, where you will find women that are going to work and they are doing everything that a man are doing in the town, at the end of the day, the men would actually decide what to do. And the film, it talks also about parents that would actually push their kids to do certain things that the kid don't want. And we've grown like that. And this is actually... this film is actually my experience. It's inspired from me, because when I finished school, high school, and I came to the U.S. Since I was a little girl, I always wanted to do film, always. And my father was thinking that I was just joking. And when I graduated from high school, and he's like, okay, you go into the state now, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I've been telling you for the past years, I don't know, that I want to make film. And he's like, no. And it was like right there. And I'm like, what do you mean no? He's like, no, there's no future in that. What do you mean film? This is not work. You're not going to be working. And I did come to the state, and for 6 months, I was not doing anything because he refused to pay. I mean, he was the one paying. If I said no, if he says no, I don't know who's going to win. And for 6 months, I was not going to school. I was not doing anything because my father completely refused me to do film. And my mom was crying, I was crying. And then at one point, he's like, okay, do something for me. Just do whatever you want, whatever degree you want. And then when you have that diploma, If you still want to go to film school, you'll go to film school. So at least when film doesn't work out, you have another degree to fall on. So I went to hotel management. So I do have a hotel management degree. So I did that for 2 years. I got my associate degree and I mailed it to him. And when he got actually my degree, that's when he agreed to take me to pay for my film school. And I had the chance to fight my father. And there's a lot of kids that cannot. They decide, right. And they you have to follow it. And this is actually the inspiration that got into me doing this film.
Well, it's interesting to me that your father was being so difficult because he, of course, is a diplomat, and you grew up traveling around the world and seeing all sorts of cultures.
Yes, yes. But for him, he's so structured about, like, I will say, quote unquote, real jobs. You have to go to work, and then at the end of the month, you have your salary. And filmmaking is like, how are you going to make money? For him, it was about my future. It's about taking care of myself. And for him, art was not a way for me to make money. He grew up like that. He had a straight life about you go to school, you have a job, you take care of your family, and at the end of the month you have your salary. And this is what he knew, and he knew what security was about. For him, it was just about security, and he wasn't seeing anything else. And of course, I understand, because he doesn't really know what filmmaking is about. He doesn't know that it's something that comes from your heart, and anything that is artistic, it's in your blood. And for him, now he's my biggest fan, of course.
Yes.
So I do understand him a certain way, because of course you will find also some kids that really don't know what to do with their life, and they will just decide like that, and they will just fail. And I think that as parents, you have to guide your kids, and that you there's a limit. You guide them to a certain way, and if you really feel that they're passionate about what they decided, let them be it.
Well, you've certainly proved to him that there's a future in film, because after studying film here in the States, you went back to Ouagadougou, the capital of Burkina Faso, and you have a career in not just film, but television there. You've been doing series, television.
Yes, I've been doing some television series that have been very successful, because African people really like the telenovelas and all of that, and our television station were bombarded with that telenovela from Brazil, from India, and we were like, we can actually do that for our local stories. So I did the first series that I did is called Monia y Rama, that went everywhere in the world actually, and then the last one is called The Testament, which was actually a very big success, not only in Burkina but in every French speaking countries, because unfortunately we don't have the English market yet, because we haven't translated our films, and this is something that we're working on.
But it's the testament is about the often the paucity of will and testament, last will and testaments that families have.
Exactly.
And the troubles that result.
Yeah, because we don't have a culture that tells us that we a father any responsible, even a mother, should write a will, and it's unbearable for us. And of course, you do find families that have two wives and three wives, and then a lot of kids. And then when the father dies, you have a war that will enter the family, because everybody wants a piece of the pie. And this was for me a way to say, listen, you can solve this, because you always will hear stories that the father died and that the second wives were thrown out from her house, or the family will come and get the every money that the father has. So it's really, really a lot of stories, and really bad stories about that. And one of the things, it's so simple to solve this problem, just write something, you know, and people won't be killing each other when you got.
But if that happened, you wouldn't have any drama to put in the series.
That's true.
Well, listeners, Apolline Traore, our listeners can come and meet you this Saturday evening, 7 p.m.
Yes.
At the PCC Cascades campus, when your film Moaz Zafira, it's premiering tonight, local Portland premiere, sorry, this afternoon at 2 p.m. Let's ask Allison Mobley about the programming that's still happening at the Cascade Festival of African Films.
Great. Well, this is Women Filmmakers Week, so we are delighted to have Apolline Traore with us for Saturday night. And tonight we have The Square, which is also made by a woman, Jahani Nujaim, and she's Egyptian. And this film has been nominated for an Oscar. It's a documentary feature. It's the first nomination for Egypt. So we're very excited to see that tonight at 7. And then tomorrow night, we have a film made by a Moroccan filmmaker. It's called On the Edge. So that's going to be very exciting. And then we have the reschedule of the films from the second week that will be showing...
through March 6th.
Through March 8th, actually.
Oh, through March 8th, wonderful.
March 6th is Sand Fishers. March 7th is Mother of George. We have the Usman Simben retrospective on Saturday, March 8th, from 1 to 4. And then the very last film will be from Mozambique, Virgin Margarita, on March 7th.
So March 1st is when Apolline Traoré will be doing a Q&A for people
exactly.
at 7 p.m. And this is all at the PCC Cascades campus. What is the website again?
The website is africanfilmfestival.org. And we also have a Facebook page, Cascade Festival of African Films. So please check it out for more information.
Apolline Traoré and Allison Mobley, thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let's listen to a bit of music from Mali right now, and then we're going to hear from Penda Jakite, a student filmmaker and young author who divides her time between Portland, Los Angeles, and rural Mali. Welcome back to the Film Show. I'm SW Conser, and I'm joined right now by Penda Jakite, the young filmmaker and author behind the recent short film Tanti and the Neighborhood Kids, Winter Vacation. Welcome to the Film Show, Penda.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So I saw your short video at the Cascade Festival of African Films, and it was this amazing little slice of life with kids in, was it Bamako, Mali?
Yeah, Bamako, Mali, West Africa.
Mm-hmm. And this was filmed when you were taking a little break from CalArts, where you're a student, the California Institute mm-hmm. of the Arts, and you went back with your folks. You have the great privilege of having two really established artists as your parents, Babawage Jakite and Rana Neuenschwander. Mm-hmm. And so you split your time between a lot of locations.
I have, yeah. I pretty much grew up between Portland, Oregon, and Mali, West Africa. They're both my homes, so.
So when you went back to Bamako mm-hmm. to film these kids, you had a lot of familiarity with the neighborhood
yeah.
that all of this activity was going on. And it was a great little slice of life. How did you get the kids to act so natural in your portrayal?
That was easy just because I do visit there often. And I hung out with them outside of filming with them as well. So sometimes I would have a camera, sometimes I wouldn't. They were used to me. They were just like my little friends. And I told the main girl when I first started filming, just pretend like the camera's not here.
This would be Tanti.
Yes, and, the main little girl, Tanti.
And it was it's not so much a narrative thing, but sort of a slice of life mm-hmm. film event around grade school age kids. And Tanti
yeah.
was the really strong figure in this.
Yeah, she is following her around with the rest of the kids in the neighborhood of Bulkasumbugu in Bamako, Mali. So yeah, it was just their experiences. And as I said, I just told Tanti, pretend like it's without a camera, pretty much. And she ended up telling the other children, just pretend like the camera's not here also. So it was pretty easy. It worked well. They weren't showing off or anything. So.
And what really stands out about the film is how much independence there is among this group of kids. Definitely the opposite of the helicopter moms mm-hmm. you might see in the United States. They're going off, they're getting into trouble, they're hanging around with the neighbors, they're chasing animals, doing whatever.
Yes, and it's great that you think that. That was a main reason for why I actually made the film. There is a huge sense of independence that these children have. They can really just go off and play and do their own thing for the whole day. They can go to the neighbors and eat. It's a very trusting community, and I think that's a beautiful part of the culture, and that's why I wanted to illustrate it through film. And I remember that experience from when I was a child, from my visits in Mali, West Africa. I had that freedom, and at my home in Oregon, I didn't have that freedom. My parents would walk me to school every day, and it was only two blocks away, so it was a very big contrast, my two homes, and it was great memories from when I was younger that I wanted to illustrate through film. So that's why I made this film.
So you spent some time growing up in the Bamako area of Mali. Mm-hmm. And another striking aspect of the film is you really don't insert yourself as the filmmaker or the narrator or the person there. You're really just letting the kids tell the story and also the neighbors around. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of humor that flows naturally and nothing seems to be imposed on the situation.
Yeah, definitely not. I wanted to give the most honest view as possible. And I could really relate to what the kids were doing because I did a lot of that stuff. I ate dirt also and all of those funny little moments that are in the film.
Yeah, they're critiquing the different types of dirt and how well they taste.
Yeah. Yeah, the little kid was mashing up dirt and sand and feeding it to his other little friend. That was a funny little
scene. And kids need to eat mud pies, you know. This is something that's missing too much from modern culture.
Yeah, it's funny because since I did that as a child in Mali, my dad does ceramics. And so he had a lot of dirt down in the basement and I would sneak down there when I was really little and to eat some of that dirt also.
Now, your dad, Babawaga Jakite, really celebrated artist here in Portland, grew up in rural Mali and then went to school in Bamako. And he's not just celebrated here in Oregon. He's also been responsible for huge murals and artworks at Disney's Animal Resort in Orlando, I understand.
That's true. Yeah.
And he illustrated a book that you wrote as a youngster. I think you were a middle school student at the time, maybe when you wrote this. It was called I Lost My Tooth in Africa.
Yeah, I Lost My Tooth in Africa. I actually first wrote it in third grade, and then I sent it off to Scholastic Publishing Company in fifth grade, and in middle school, I was in seventh grade when it came out, so my dad did the illustrations, and it was actually of my little sister. She had lost her tooth in Mali, West Africa, and she got a chicken. So I decided to write my story on that.
So instead of a quarter or a dollar under your pillow, you end up with a hen or a rooster.
Yes. And that was a crazy contrast from, just getting money here in the U.S. So I started putting my teeth under calabashes here in the U.S., actually, when I lost my teeth here. So
now, like a lot of other Portlanders, do you have any chickens around the house here in town?
Oh, we used to. We used to have chickens. We don't anymore. But I'd love to have some again. They were great pets.
I think the first time you actually visited Mali was when you were just an infant. You were maybe a year old. Mm-hmm. And you've gone back frequently ever since. With your folks.
Yeah, I used to go back a lot more often when I was younger. But now I'm in college and I don't get to visit as often. Yeah, it's my second home. I visited there every year, every other year throughout my life. So
now, I hope you don't mind my asking, but you're only about 20 years old, is that right?
Yeah, I'm 20.
So you've actually had a pretty impressive resume so far.
And, well, thank you.
And I understand that you have even bigger ideas for your CalArts diploma project coming up.
Oh, my thesis project. Yeah, I'm graduating in a year, so I'm beginning to think about my end of the year thesis project that I'll put together by the time I graduate. And a lot of my film work in general, video work in general, is based on cultural awareness, as you can see through the film Tanti's Winter Vacation, but also my experiences as a female of color here in the U.S. and in Mali, West Africa as well. And that's what my thesis project is going to be about. And it's also going to delve into portrayals of black females in both countries and my critique on it pretty much and my experiences with that. So that will be my thesis project.
We've been talking about your film, Tanti and the Neighborhood Kids, mm-hmm. Winter Vacation. And one of the not so optimistic parts of the film is that a lot of these grade school kids, the school isn't free for them. Their families have to come up with money to go to school. And so your family has been a big part of the Kofalen Cultural Center in Bamako, which allows artistic education. And there are also nonprofits that you're affiliated with that help kids get the education that they really need.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, my family started Kofalen Cultural Center, and it's an arts cultural center where people from here or people from anywhere really can come and learn more about the culture and learn about arts through the culture, through artists and traditional artists that are from Mali. It's a great program, and we also have a tutoring program as well. And my film starts out in the tutoring program. And there's children there from ages maybe 4, 5 to 12 even in the classroom. And it's been a great success. A lot of these kids never had an education in their life, and they're able to get up to speed and be sent to public school, which is not free. It is about $5 a month. And we work through donations to the cultural center, and that's how we're able to upkeep supporting these children and being able to send them to school. Most of these kids wouldn't be able to go to school at all in their life without the help of the cultural center. So it's a great cause.
And I'm assuming you're hoping to get a chance to break away from school for a little while in the not-so-distant future and visit Bamako again?
Yes, definitely. I'm definitely going to go visit and maybe live for a little bit back home in Bamako, Mali, after I graduate. But we'll see what's in store for the future. Nothing's set in stone, so...
So your film, again, short film, Tanti and the Neighborhood Kids Winter Vacation, has played at the Cascade Festival of African Films here in Portland. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be heading back to L.A., to Cal Arts.
Yeah.
And what's next for Tanti and the Neighborhood Kids? Do you have maybe the festival circuit coming up?
We have student screenings. And then my school is also involved with the Red Cat Disney Theater in downtown L.A.
Oh, this is Roy and Edna Disney's.
Yeah, and I have had a film shown there last year. So.
Oh, tell us about that one.
It was a short film. It was about 5 minutes. It's called Diary of Reflection, and it's very close to what my thesis is about. It's my experiences as a Black female and critique on our place in the media and how that affects our lives. So cultural awareness is not around us enough in this country, I think. I think it should definitely be taught in schools. It should be required in schools is what I think.
Well, it seems like in some areas there's an active resistance to cross-cultural education mm-hmm. in the schools.
Yeah, it's very true. And that's something that's great about the Cascade Festival of African Films is that, I mean, it's free, first of all, so anybody is welcome to go and view these films. And you really learn so much just by watching these films, and the filmmakers are there to be able to explain, give their take on what's being shown, and you can really interact with the filmmakers. So it's a great festival.
Well, Penda Jakite, the author of I Lost My Tooth in Africa and the filmmaker behind Tanti and the Neighborhood Kids Winter Vacation, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you, and I'm looking forward to your future projects. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
This is SW Concert. Now back to Jen with more of the film show.
Thanks, Conch. March 1st marks the opening of registration for spring classes at the Northwest Film Center School of Film. The school offers classes in film production, screenwriting, editing, documentary, filmmaking, animation, and more. For more details, visit nwfilm.org/school. From March 6th through 9th, the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival returns to the Hollywood Theater, featuring nearly 100 narrative and documentary features and shorts by women filmmakers. The list happens to include KBOO's stage and studio host Demay Roberts, who will screen her short film May May, A Daughter's Song, on March 7th. Closing night will feature an evening with the festival's guest of honor, Joanna Priestley. For a full list of films and showtimes, visit powfest.com. On March 13th, the Northwest Film Center will showcase Beyond Beyond, the Bob Moritz AV mixtape. The 7 p.m. screening will feature work from the local underground filmmaker's career, ranging from 1991 to 2012. Go to nwfilm.org to learn more, or to listen to our July 2013 The Film Show interview with Bob about the Portland Underground Film Festival, visit our site, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. Also on March 13th, our very own KBOO at the Clinton series continues at the Clinton Street Theater with a 7 p.m. screening of The Inconvenient Truth About Waiting for Superman, which takes a critical eye to the documentary Waiting for Superman from a labor perspective. For more info, visit cstpdx.com. On March 15th, also at the Clinton Street Theater, the Traveling Bicycle Film Festival stops in Portland with 6:30 and 8:30 screenings showcasing bike-related films. More info is available at bicyclefilmfestival.com. On March 17th and 18th, Local Collective Cinema Project continues its new season with Making and Unmaking TV, interview work from the 1980s and 1990s, featuring work by the directors Tony Conrad and Skip Bloomberg. Mr. Conrad and the guest curator will be in attendance. Shows at 7:30 at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art on Southwest 10th and Stark Street. To learn more, visit cinemaproject.org. On March 20th, Santo and the Blue Demon versus the Monster screens at the Hollywood Theater at 7 p.m. as part of the new classic Latin American film series Cinescopio, co-presented by Fusion Arte. This season of the series has focused on lucha libre and film. For details, go to hollywoodtheater.org. And on March 26th, the Clinton Street Theater's Real Feminism film series will host a 7 p.m. screening of Maria in Nobody's Land, a documentary chronicling three Salvadoran women's immigration into the U.S. More details can be found at cstpdx.com. Well, that about wraps it up. Back to you, Conch.
Thanks, Jen. And thanks so much to all of our guests today. Allison Mobley, Communications Director of the Cascade Festival of African Films, along with filmmakers Apolline Traore and Penda Jakite. Thanks also, as always, to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. The audio for this show will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And you can keep up with us on Twitter at @kboofilmshow. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, February 27th. I'm Kristen Yount. Computer giant IBM announced sweeping layoffs. Thousands of people are going to lose their paycheck. The announcement of the cuts came a day later than anticipated, so as not to steal the thunder from IBM CEO Ginni Rometty, who gave a keynote speech at a mobile telecommuting conference in Spain yesterday. The layoffs affect people working for IBM Global and some domestic plant jobs. Hundreds of Filipinos marched on the capital city of Manila today. The large demonstration showed the world that social groups there oppose the expansion of the United States military presence. The march happened in response to President Benigno, or Noynoy Aquino's announcement that a meeting next month could seal the deal, expanding the number of troops allowed in. Critics say that Aquino panders to the United States because, though trade with neighboring China remains strong, disputes over territories in the South China Sea have caused tensions. The United States won the right to the Subic Bay in the American-Philippine War in 1899, but relinquished most of the infrastructure to the archipelago in 1991, and it became known as the Subic Bay Free Port Zone. Both the United States and the Philippines claim that the base won't be totally taken over by U.S. troops, but will be used to house some warships, spare parts, and troops of Marines just in case of a crisis. Groups' resistance to a United States buildup remember five decades of direct colonial rule, followed by U.S. backing of dictator Ferdinand Marcos from 1965 to 1986, who stole millions from the people. Protesters cite social and environmental harm that comes with a military presence as compelling reasons to not invite more of it. 13 New Mexican workers have tested positive for radiation in their bodies after working at the Waste Isolation Pilot Project, or WIP as it's locally known. Officials report that the federally owned nuclear waste dump off-gassed harmful radiation from the plutonium waste generated in Los Alamos labs and other facilities in the United States that are stored there. The plant was built in southern New Mexico despite the public outcry because the waste would be shipped overland on state highways through many communities. It remains to be seen if any of the other 139 people who were present during the leak were exposed enough to test positive. Officials deny that people physically around those affected could suffer from radiation poisoning as well. MIA Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych remains in Russia and plans to try and regain a foothold in the Ukraine as her leader, even though opposition leaders say that his time there is through. The new parliament called Verkhovna Rada chose Alexander Turchynov as interim president and will hold elections for a more permanent president on May 25th. The new parliament also voted in favor of having Yanukovych tried for crimes against humanity in the International Criminal Court, making a statement regarding, they want to try him for crimes against humanity in the International Criminal Court. Yeah. Students and teachers at Portland State University plan to walk out today. It is happening now on the Southeast Park blocks downtown. A recent report from the city of Portland compiled a list of 22 possible sites for the Right to Dream 2, the homeless rest stop for the houseless in Portland, currently located at 4th and Northwest Burnside in downtown Portland. That's going to do it for the noon headlines today. Please tune in every weekday at 5 p.m. for the latest in local, national, and international news created by volunteers in our Southeast Portland studios. This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible in their carbon-neutral eco-brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and the Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Also, The Garden Spot, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticulture.